Hello, and welcome to another episode of eDiscovery Chicks, the podcast about all things eDiscovery and legal tech, hosted by two gals who are having a hell of a week. Anyways, we're your hosts. That's Bree.
And that's Angie. And today we're talking about how having a solid workflow can revolutionize your day. But before we get to that, how are you doing? Are you glad that it's the end of this crazy week?
I am really glad. I feel like this week started off in an interesting place, but then this also Onyx Storm came out, which is the latest installation in the Fourth Wing series, which for the unindoctrinated is a romanticy series that also involves dragons. Because yes, I have fully jumped on that bandwagon. It is my happy place. I'm being an escapist and doing that. I started reading the third one and then realized there's this meme on the internet, Gandalf in the Mines of Moria being like, I have no memory of this place. And that's how I felt when I started book three. And so I've gone back to book one and I'm now re-listening to all of the Fourth Wing series. And I've basically told my family they can't speak to me for a little while. Like, I'm unavailable.
Mommy's off limits.
Yeah. Mom's busy.
Oh, wow. Well, that sounds a little bit more exciting than my week.
What's going on with you? What happened in your week?
Well, we did have some excitement, though, in Houston. We had snow for the first time in forever. And it's like, anytime that it usually snows here, it's overnight, so you don't really get to see it coming down. And by the time you wake up, it's almost gone, or it's just like dirty ice, you know, that's left over. But this time we all woke up to snow coming down, like hard, white, pillowy, fluffy snow. And we got, like, some people got 3 to 5 inches in Houston, which is really incredible. Like, I've been here my whole life, and that is really not something I've seen.
Oh my God. Ever.
My mom actually lives southeast of Houston in a town called Beaumont, and they got 9 inches, which is
nine.
The last time it happened was 1960. And she actually had a picture of it, which I thought was cool. But everybody in Houston, it's like the whole world came to a halt because everybody was outside having snowball fights and trying to find things to ski with or sled down a hill. And it was really fun to see the kids outside. I'm like, this is so random. It's like 1980. There's kids out here playing with each other and not like inside, you know, playing their video games. So it was fun to see that. But, you know, working from home, like, nobody understands that you can't come to the phone for a call or a meeting because it's snowing. They're like, what? You work in the snow all the time, you dumb Texan. Like, you have to get on the call. And so I
missed. And you're like, you don't understand. This is a once in a decade right. event for us here.
Right, exactly.
I feel like I saw some stuff on social media about your snow, and it was like maps of the U.S. and the amount of snow that has to fall before everything shuts down. And I swear Seattle and Houston was like 1 inch. Everybody's just like, okay, well, today's done. We're done with today.
It's very true. It's interesting. And it's also very funny that nobody else in the world understands it if they actually do get snow. I'm like, no, you don't understand. We're on lockdown. All the schools are closed. You can't go eat anywhere. Like, the mayor's on TV. They're having emergency city council meetings. Like,
it's a whole event, thing. People.
It is. But, you know, at least it's not the rats eating drugs, because that was so last week. You saw that news story?
I love that news story. That is one of my favorite news stories. I want to picture Houston's entire rat population breaking in to the evidence rooms of local police precincts and just stealing drugs.
Did you see, like, some of those drugs are like 40 years old? Can you imagine smoking like 40-year-old pot, first of all? Like, what is that like? And second of all, why are we keeping it for 40 years? Like, isn't there a way of destroying these things? After a while, those cases can't still be active, I wouldn't think.
Send it to me. I'll smoke it. I'm kidding.
Can we just burn it all and let everybody have a great time?
Oh, my God. I love a good low-budget creature film / documentary. And there was one, pretty sure it's on Netflix, could be Amazon Prime, but it's called Cocaine Sharks. And it's about all these sharks off the coast of Florida and, like, in the Cuban area. And they may or may not go and eat cocaine that falls into the ocean. I feel like it was anticlimactic, and it was like, they're actually fine. This doesn't affect them very much. But I, when I saw the title Cocaine Sharks, I was like, oh, I got to watch that. That's right up my alley.
I'm like, why is this why we have such a rat infestation in some places? It's because all of the rats have the munchies, and they're constantly wanting to go search for food. And maybe, like, what happens to a coked up shark? Like,
there's no more Funyuns in Houston. The rats have gotten them all.
Yeah, chocolate's on an all-time low. Like, and then, you know, it like the shark, is that why they're going up on the beach? Like, so into such shallow waters because they're all coked up on drugs. And they have no idea where home is. Is that
maybe. Maybe they're like, wait, I belong here. This is fine. I can do it. I'll Hulk out.
So funny. Oh, okay. My God.
Well, sure. We've only covered a lot of ground.
You're going to come to hear about fairy smut. I don't even know what to call it.
Yeah, fairy smut, dragon smut. All of it works.
Snow and animals addicted to drugs. Okay.
Okay. Anything now on to our next topic, e-discovery. So Bree said, today we are talking about having a solid workflow and how that can really revolutionize your day. I mean, why even give a flock? Who cares? Well, we should all care because have you ever felt like your workday is just a game of whack-a-mole or like you have 1,000 things on your plate and you're making progress on none of them? Well, a solid workflow can help with that.
That's right. And the purpose of today is to focus on building workflows, setting goals, emphasizing its relevance for e-discovery professionals, and far beyond that. So why we think this topic is critical? Well, workflows aren't just for legal pros. They're for anyone who wants to crush an efficiency and achieve their goals, which, of course, me and Angie are all about crushing an efficiency.
Oh, we love that. I bet those cocaine sharks have a workflow. They're like, hey, listen, I spotted the package. Now Kevin's going to go retrieve it, and then we're going to share it.
I want to see this. but today we're going to talk about the fundamentals of workflows, breaking down the different components of workflows, leveraging technology, and fostering collaboration, one of my favorite topics.
All right, let's talk about building a workflow. We want to break down how you actually do that in a way that's applicable, not only to e-discovery, but just more generally. So let's start by defining a workflow. To us, a workflow is a shared roadmap that aligns teams, tools, and processes so that everybody knows what to do, when to do it, and why they're doing it, how everything fits together. So often, this can manifest as a structured sequence of tasks, actions, and decision points designed to achieve a specific outcome in the most efficient way possible.
Yes. So it's important for us to remember who the workflow involves. What is the point of the workflow? What is the end result? What are we trying to achieve? Because workflows can look like a lot of different things for a lot of different people. Like, for example, a solo entrepreneur, a workflow might look like a morning routine or a client onboarding checklist. For a global team, they're really critical for synchronizing time zones, managing diverse tasks, and ensuring seamless collaboration throughout the organization.
Wait, Bree, do you have a morning routine?
I mean, we kind of have a morning routine. I think when you have a kid, you kind of have to like follow a certain, you know, way of doing things. What about you?
Yeah, I totally do. I do start by checking my phone because I always check my Aura Ring scores from overnight because otherwise I don't know how I'm supposed to feel about the day. And and then I usually get up and like get ready or whatever, make my coffee. But then I feel like my routine really is solidified when I sit down at my desk and start my workday because I don't open my computer. Well, I open my computer, but I don't go and check Slack or email or anything yet. I start the day by going to my calendar and transferring everything onto a paper calendar because I'm 80 at heart. And then habit that I'm trying to cultivate is I'll do that. So I'll usually set out like 3 goals for the day that I'm going to accomplish. Today was text Emily, text Brooke, and text Austin. Those are my big 3. It's like respond to my friends. And then I usually collect a vocab word and put it in my daily planner as well because I'm also a nerd. I'm an 80-year-old nerd, basically.
That is so cool. I like some of your morning routine. You know, I have a lot of aspirations for morning routines that I've tried over time. Like I used to have like a 15-minute, I can't remember what I called it, power session or something with myself where I had to like mentally get myself right because I was overwhelmed or I was stressed or some things were going on and I needed to keep my purpose, you know, in life, like front forward in my mind. And so I took that 15 minutes every day to like focus on that. And unfortunately, it kept like, I put it on my calendar and it kept getting bumped so many times for meetings that I just let go of it. So now I'm like, nah, we're not going to do that anymore. But so I feel like I'm not very consistent in that way, but I should be. But I like your goal idea.
When I started doing it, I would do actual big goals for the day. And I quickly realized that my aspirations were too lofty and I needed to regress to things like just text your friends back. My God.
Mine would be like, get up 3 times to go to the bathroom and make sure you eat lunch.
Sometimes mine are just take 5 deep breaths throughout the workday. Yeah.
That's kind of cool, actually. I might have to start thinking about that.
Okay, anyway, back to eDiscovery.
So we were talking about how workflows are really the backbone for success in terms of eDiscovery. And so if you've been in eDiscovery for a while or even just a short period of time, you probably already know this. I mean, our whole industry is built along the lines of the EDRM, which in itself is kind of like a workflow. But we break that down into smaller chunks, of course, as we're trying to focus on getting different projects done or accomplish certain tasks. So when you have a workflow, you're ensuring that you're not just getting them done, but you're getting them done in a proactive and a purposeful way. You're getting them done right on time and within the budget. It's how you go from reactive chaos to proactive precision. Less wasted time, less money spent, less risk for your organization.
Oof, I love that. Reactive chaos to proactive precision. That's such a tagline. You should go into PR or advertising.
Oh, yeah.
PR for workflows. Plus one to all of that. I mean, think about your daily tasks, whether you're managing a team or you're just trying to get through your inbox or text your friends back. I mean, what's one area where a better workflow could save you time and stress? I guess I was posing that as a rhetorical question, not at you, Brie, but if you have thoughts.
Work-wise, I always think the repetitive administrative tasks are the ones that really annoy me because I'm like, oh my gosh, I have to do this every single time. It's like I have to reinvent the wheel, or if I haven't been organized about something, it's like, oh my gosh, now I have to go figure out what I did last time. Like those kind of things just kind of constantly grind at my nerves and cause me some stress. And I know those are the things you could easily have a workflow around and simplify for yourself.
Absolutely. I feel that way too. I often find myself having random thoughts throughout the day of, oh, I need to go do that, or I need to go do this or whatever. And so eventually, you know, I just developed a workflow where those random little thoughts, they all go on a page in my planner. And then at some point throughout the week, I allot time and I go find all those random little thoughts and I put them in the right place, because I often, you know, I'll get into bed at night or something and I'll realize 5 things I didn't do throughout the day, or mm-hmm. 6 things I need to buy on Amazon tomorrow, and I need a place to put them. So I just developed this sort of workflow for myself, and really helped alleviate some mental load.
Yeah, I like that. Well, let's break down the components of the workflow, shall we? We're starting at the very beginning. First of all, we have to have some sort of trigger. We have to define what's the beginning of this and what's going to be at the end. What's the end result? So a trigger is going to be something like an event or a task or a decision that sets everything in motion. We have some examples in terms of e-discovery. It'd be like a legal hold notice or receiving a discovery request. Those are 2 examples of what might initiate a trigger. Outside of the legal scope, this could be used in project management for things like implementing technology after you purchase software applications, or in our own personal daily life. With Angie was doing a really great job of sharing some of her own personal workflows, but one might be grocery shopping triggered by running out of essentials. So now you have a way of doing that that's more efficient. And if you have noticed in the conversation yet, you'll know that Angie is much more on top of her organizational game than I am.
It's a sickness.
So listen to her.
Yeah, I like those. I like thinking of triggers. And then as Brie and I have touched on, we really like having things to check off throughout the process. So I recommend setting some milestones, which would be intermediate steps that measure progress and ensure that the whole project, the whole task stays on track. In your grocery shopping example, that could be, okay, let me make a list of things that I need to get, and then let me put them in my Instacart because I'm lazy and will not go to the grocery store. So workflows can be as simple as that. A couple examples in eDiscovery, though, maybe when, if a legal hold is your trigger, something happens that triggers the need for a legal hold. Well, then that sets off a workflow where you have to identify custodians, you have to scope the hold, you have to complete an initial collection, you have to ingest data into a review platform. All of this is obviously oversimplified in the e-discovery context, but I'm trying to illustrate the point that you have a trigger and then you have a specific set of things that you do following that trigger. And you can check them off, and they're milestones along the way to completion. One thing I'm doing in my personal life right now, I am running a half marathon in April. And so I've got a schedule for myself or a workflow for how I'm going to train for that. And every week or so, I've got a couple targets that I'm trying to hit. I'm trying to do a tempo run. I'm trying to do a progression run and a distance run. And each of those feels like a milestone to me. And so I can kind of check them off my mental checklist every time I do one of those. So that's my workflow in my personal life. And I do, you know, I do this for work too. That's just to illustrate that you can really apply this workflow concept to pretty much anything.
So I guess the final thing in terms of the key components here is the end goal, the ultimate outcome. So first, in the very beginning, I mentioned that you need to define this. So all along, you know what you're trying to shoot for. The end goal would be your final destination that you're trying to reach and the reason that the workflow exists in the first place. In e-discovery, some examples of this can be like, maybe we're responding to a discovery request and we've got to produce documents for a court order deadline. Maybe we're generating a defensible audit trail to avoid sanctions. Maybe there's even e-discovery related processes within our organization that we want to think about. What happens when somebody leaves that's on legal hold? What's our workflow as a company? What happens with the issuance and acceptance of legal hold notices? How are they distributed and how do people acknowledge them and how do they get reminders? When we're coordinating with outside teams to collect responsive data, how do they get that response? Where does the data come from? Who are the right people to contact? What? How do you know it's done? Where does it go? All of those are workflows. Coordinating with IT regarding change management procedures in data on legal hold. How do I know what happens when IT decides to sunset an application in my organization? Do they know whether it's on legal hold? What does that workflow look like? How do we protect ourselves and cover those pending risks? Understanding the pain points for all participating parties in a workflow and understanding what the win and the end would look like for everyone is the key here. Just because you all share the final ultimate outcome, there's going to be wins along the way for all parties involved. And you want to make sure that everybody's winning.
Yeah, I love that. You've got to collaborate with the people around you and make sure that everybody is rowing in the same direction for the same reason. And that reason is probably your end goal. So I kind of touched on this earlier, but one of my biggest tips for success for creating a workflow that works and that sticks is to write it down. And this can be something as simple as a little checklist with three things on it, or it can be something more complicated like a Lucidchart or Miro or some of these softwares that are specifically designed for creating a workflow. It can also be something in a project management software like an Asana or a Trello, things where you've got a trigger and it cues off a series of events that must flow from that. There's this quote that I really like, and I can't even remember where I got it from. I think it might be David Allen's book on getting things done, but it's, if it's not written down, it doesn't exist. And I really like that when I think about workflows, because I find that when I abandon my morning workflow, for example, my morning routine, it's because it's not written down anywhere and I don't feel accountable to anything. So it just kind of sits out there in the ether and eventually I kind of get lazy about it. But if it's written down, then I feel a very nice little sense of shame if I don't follow it. And there's a reason I do it, right? Like, I feel better if I follow my morning routine, if I do the things that make me feel like I've accomplished something during the day. I just feel better. And so that would be my tip. Write it down.
Yeah. And once you have written it down, test it. Pilot the workflow on a small scale before rolling it out to your whole team. An example might be using a single discovery request as a test case, and then you refine the process. You know, how do we receive this? What does it look like when it comes in? Who needs to be involved? How do we communicate that to one another? How do we fulfill it? What's involved? Are there applications involved, people involved, different departments involved? Who needs to communicate and how often, and how are we going to do that? And when is it done? And what do we do with data after it's been produced? All those are questions that need to be answered in a proactive way so that you know exactly what to expect whenever this workflow is triggered. And also remember that you're going to refine your workflow as you go. I would build in some regular reviews of your workflow to identify inefficiencies or bottlenecks. And sometimes this is done even inherently, like with a company, because they've got an audit procedure. Maybe this is a workflow with technology where the IT auditors are going to go through there and test it and make sure, hey, we're going to trigger this workflow to take off and watch the different pieces and parts and make sure that they're all acting as we expect for them to do through an audit process. But if you don't have that built in your organization, you be the audit process, you know, and make sure that you're testing things, you're tweaking things, and that you're flexible enough to change if something's not working to achieve that final result that you were looking for.
I love all of that, Brie. And my final tip, just to add on to that, would be to engage the team. Make sure that everybody who's going to be involved in or impacted by the final product is involved in the workflow. These are your stakeholders, the people who need buy-in to ensure that your workflow is usable and efficient and the best way to get from point A to point B. So for example, I will often have to respond to regulatory requests at work. And I know that when we get one of these, it's going to be a similar workflow, but a different iteration, right? Different subject matter, but generally the same workflow. And I know that I'm going to need to operate cross-collaboratively with people from IT, engineering, PR, my superiors. And so I've kind of got a workflow going where I know that, all right, we get one of these requests. These are going to be my first 5, 6, 7 steps. And from there, I'll reach a decision point on what my next 5, 6, 7 steps are going to be. But I've got them all written out so that I don't have to reinvent the wheel. I just have to apply that process to this specific iteration. Actually, you know what? I said that was going to be my last tip, but I have one more thing to say, which is don't let the great be the enemy of the good. I found myself abandoning workflows, abandoning routines because I can't do it 100% of the time. And I think it's important to remember that your routine and your workflow are still successful, even if you're not hitting them 100% of the time. I have fallen off my morning routine more times than I can count because I had an unrealistic expectation of success. And now I've stuck with my routines for a really long time because I don't have to do them every day. My goal is to do them 3 times a week. And that feels approachable. That feels sustainable. And so don't let the great be the enemy of the good.
Oh my gosh, I think that's like the most inspirational tip that you could have shared, Angie. I have suffered from that so many times. I try to achieve perfection. And when I can't, I just give up altogether.
Yeah.
So I love that 3 times a week is a really great goal most of the time. I mean, sometimes you might travel or whatever and things change and throw you off your routine. But
right.
That's a great tip. And I need to heed your advice. Angie's talking about collaboration. And I want to dive a little bit deeper into that, not just because it's one of my pedestals I like to stand on and preach, but it's actually true. It is the secret to success. Collaboration is key. I mean, if you think about a workflow like a relay race, if one person drops the baton or worse, doesn't even know they're in the race, then the whole team loses, which that's my favorite. Like, wait, what? Why am I in this meeting? Like, I didn't even know I was on this committee. What does that mean? Even perfect workflows, which we know that doesn't really exist. There is no perfect workflow, but the most perfect that you could be workflow, they fail without strong communication. So I think that it's key that you read the room and remember that everybody involved has a different language that's meaningful to them. You know, if you're talking to IT, you're working through an IT workflow, that workflow likely is going to involve a lot of visual graphs and charts and workflow charts and things like that that makes sense to them as they engineer workflows in their environment. Whereas if you're working on a workflow with a legal team, that workflow might take on a completely different form because those individuals don't really value the information in a chart or graph so much as they might value the content of what's trying to be achieved. So I think it's important that we all agree on the language in which we want to communicate that's appropriate for each party involved. some of the pitfalls that I have seen with workflows gone wrong are misaligned priorities. Teams are focusing on different objectives. IT is trying to feed their budget and their objectives, which might be in complete conflict with what legal is trying to do. When we can't get on the same page, we're not going to get far in our workflow. Poor communication. I just talked about how important communication is, but it really is critical if we're not communicating with each other in the right way, or we're not reaching the right people who need to be involved with the workflow to begin with. Lack of accountability is another one. You know, if you don't have those auditing procedures kind of mapped out as part of your workflow, we're going to go back and test it and make sure everybody's doing their job kind of thing, then you could, your workflow could likely fall through the cracks if somebody's not pulling their weight. And finally, I would say lack of buy-in. If it's not important to somebody in the workflow, this is not cool to them. This is not a priority for their business. they don't have the money. They don't want to have the money for it. When there's not enough buy-in, workflows can fizzle away into nothing. And a lot of times it helps to have that executive buy-in and incorporation or someone from the top that's like, hey, so this is going to be a priority for everybody, if you like it or not. So, you know, anyway, those are some common pitfalls that I have seen.
Yeah. And so how do you avoid those? What are some good strategies for effective collaboration to create a workflow that works and that lasts? I would say kind of three things. First is role clarity. Make sure that people who are involved in the workflow know what their responsibilities are. Are they responsible for the task? Are they accountable for it? Are they supposed to be consulted? Or are they supposed to be informed? That would be number one. People should know if they're on first. They need to know if they're the one with the ball so they can run with it. Number two, I would say transparent communication. Use a tool like Slack or Teams or a designated email thread or a text thread or whatever it is to centralize your conversations to ensure that everyone has access to the same information. I know we're talking about this in a work context, but just to give an example from my personal life, every time we go on a trip, my husband and I have a template shared note on our iPhone, and we just copy it, you know, to the next time we need to use it. But it's got a packing list for things that we need to do before we leave the house. It's got a packing list for things that we need to pack the morning of, i.e. after our kid gets up. And it has alleviated so much stress, so much mental load. Every time we go, we know we've just got the same workflow that we need to execute, and we don't have to reinvent it every time and make a new list. All right, that was a bit of a tangent. So my third recommendation for creating an effective workflow is to have regular check-ins. Maybe that's weekly, maybe it's monthly, quarterly, or annually. You know, you decide the cadence that works best for you and the people that you're collaborating with. But you want to address things like, what's working? What's not working? How can we adjust? And it's really easy to fall out of the habit of talking to the people that you're working with. But I think asking those questions and creating space for that kind of brainstorming and collaboration is really critical to the success of teams.
So let's talk about technology and workflows and how we can use it to help us. Number one, I would like to say technology is a tool, but it's not a one-size-fits-all crutch. I heard the analogy that technology is like a high-tech bicycle. It can make you faster, but you still need to pedal. And I completely agree with that. I mean, it's not here to be your be-all, end-all solution. It's not the easy button, but it sure does make your life a lot easier. It just doesn't accomplish your final goal without your input and without your effort. There's this, I'm sure everybody's heard this garbage in, garbage out. If you don't make it a priority to set your workflows up, test your workflows, communicate constantly, make sure that your data is clean and in good working order, then you're going to regret it, because your workflow, when you're using technology, is going to have errors. It's going to have inefficiencies. It's going to break down. So it's important that you make it a priority to participate and in your end of the bargain in terms of setting up technology appropriately. You know, one example in the e-discovery world of technology gone wrong is predictive coding. You know, it can save hours and lots of money when we use it to help us identify documents that might be responsive, for example, in a document review. But if we haven't provided a clear review protocol, or we're not being consistent in our review, predictive coding is not going to be any help at all. So it's important to really pay attention to that in terms of technology.
With that in mind, there are some tools that we have found really helpful to us. So as far as eDiscovery specific tools, there are things like Relativity, Extero, Everlaw, Logical. And these are really great for managing large scale projects. As far as just garden variety collaboration tools, communication tools, there's Slack, there's Microsoft Teams, there's ServiceNow, there's Discord, you know, all these kinds of things. And then there are also tools that are designed to help you create a workflow, like Asana, Trello, Monday.com. But it doesn't need to be anything fancy either. If you're trying to create a workflow, it can be as simple as a Google Doc, a shared note, you know, a recurring calendar invite with bullet points in the description of the event. It can be something super simple, but the point is figure out where you are recreating the wheel and nip that in the bud.
So there's pros and cons in using technology. I mean, on the pro side, we can all agree that automation reduces manual tasks. And man, we're seeing automation like we've never seen it before in our industry and other industries, thanks to AI. And I'm excited by that. And I think that it will change our work forever. And I'm excited to see what the future is like for my child and our kids that are growing up now. Their work is going to be so much different than what we've experienced in our past. It also improves accuracy and consistency, which is important in terms of, you know, of course, being efficient, but it's also important to reduce your risk in an organization. You want to be as accurate and consistent as you can be, and it enhances team collaboration with centralized platforms. We can all be on the same page. We can all share each other's work product, so we're not having to reinvent the wheel each time. But there are also could be some cons in using technology, like too many workflow exceptions. We set up a workflow to do something and we have to keep going back because there's all these one-off situations that don't seem to really kind of fit in the workflow. If you're doing that, you need to go back and revisit your workflow fundamentally because there's something going on that it's not being flexible enough to accommodate what you're actually trying to achieve. There's also steep learning curves sometimes or resistance from team members to participate. You know, Angie just rattled off a bunch of different software applications, which are all awesome. But they all have to be learned and they all have to make sense to people. I'll admit, Angie loves to use Trello. I've never used it before. And I think it's amazing and it helps us to be organized and on top of things with the podcast. And I'm empowered by it. But it took me a minute to like wrap my mind around what's going on. I need to organize this visually before I can jump in. So I had to get schooled a little bit. But now that I understand it, of course, I'm on board. And we have to remember, especially those team members that aren't as techno savvy as maybe some of us are, it's going to take them a little bit longer and they're going to get frustrated. So we have to be patient and provide the proper training materials for them. A final con that's worth mentioning is costs. They could really escalate, especially when you are using those advanced tools, like those AI-driven platforms. They sound great. They sound good in the beginning, but as your data starts to build, then so do your costs. So that's just something to keep in mind.
Yeah, I also want to build on something that you just said, Brie, about the resistance from team members and the steep learning curve. And that's, you want to be careful when you're creating a workflow, especially if you're in charge of creating it for a bunch of other people, that you're not overworking the situation. Generally, people are going to find a lightweight, like more entry-level approach to be more palatable than something that's really heavyweight and complicated and super rigid, you know? So you want to figure out who you're working with and make the workflow speak to them too. Okay, so let's kind of wrap things up. And I want to encourage everybody listening to this episode to audit a current workflow of yours and refine it using the tips from this episode. Do you have a workflow for your morning, you know, your morning routine? Let's start there. That's a super simple one, right? Do you get up and get coffee? And then is there a habit that you want to pick up that you can incorporate into that workflow? That's how I got myself every day. Like I make a cup of coffee and that's my trigger to audit something out of my fridge or pantry. And so that's how I keep my fridge and pantry in order, is that's my workflow for that. So it can be something super simple. It doesn't need to be heavyweight. It can be a really easy, you just need a trigger and an action.
That's super smart advice. I really like that. I would also encourage all of us to think about the things in life that drive us crazy, right? Are there things in your personal life like, God, why can I never find time to meditate in the morning? Or why can I never find time to read? Why can I never find time to fill in the blank? Whatever it is. If that's driving you nuts, then figure out a workflow so that you can incorporate that. I love the example that Angie just gave of auditing her food in her refrigerator. That's great. But then think about, if you're thinking about work, what are the repetitive tasks that you hate to do that drive you nuts? Like, what are you like, God, I hate when I have to go find something. I never know where it is. Oh, I wish I could be more organized. I wish I could have this in a different way. When you have those tasks, take a step back and think about why they are what they are and what you could implement so that you fix that. Think about overlapping processes between teams. Is there any discovery process that you are collaborating with IT and they seem to be doing some of the same work as you're doing? You're both logging the same information in different ways or doing the same things in different ways. Like, how can you collaborate together so that you can be more efficient? And it only has to be done once. I would say start there in terms of when you want to build out a workflow and see how far you get.
Ooh, I want to share one more workflow that I love, which is also a great way to incorporate AI into your life. During the week, I will collect news articles that are related to my industry. And at the end of the week, I plug them all into ChatGPT. I've got time on my calendar. I've got a block on my calendar on Friday. And I plug them all into ChatGPT and ask it to just give me a summary of what's happened that week.
Brilliant.
It's
so brilliant.
I'm like, this is great because I don't want to spend all this time reading all this stuff, but I do want to stay up to date. And if there's something I need to dig into more, great, I can do that. But I've got this nice little workflow where I make an AI do the heavy lifting for me, and then I'm spending my time and energy where it really matters.
If you accidentally incorporate a page from one of the books that you said you're reading into that, that would be an interesting outcome.
Oh my God. It's so funny because these books, and I feel, you know what? It's a New York Times bestseller. I feel very fine about reading this, but my friend texted me last night because he's reading these books and he's on a plane and he was like, I can't read this in public. It's like, it's too aggressive. It's too dirty. I can't do it. It's too explicit. I was like, yes, buddy. Welcome.
Welcome to the dark side.
Oh, yeah. Okay. All right. That's all we've got for you today. Thank you so much for joining us on eDiscovery Chicks. We hope you learned something new, felt empowered, or just had some fun along the way. Don't forget to join our flock by following us on LinkedIn and Instagram, and check out our website, ediscoverychicks.com. If you loved this episode, share it with your network, leave us a review, or tag us on your socials with your favorite takeaway. Or share your favorite workflow. We love that too. And don't forget to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts so you never miss an episode. Until then, flock on, friends.
The views we've expressed today are the eDiscovery Chicks views and don't necessarily represent the views of our employees, partners, or clients. This podcast is available solely for educational purposes to provide general information about eDiscovery principles and not to provide legal advice to any specific situation. It is not a substitute for legal advice from a lawyer you've retained and who has agreed to represent you. See you next time.
Bye.